Welcome to the Kansas City Public Library. I'm Katie Stover. I'm the Director of Reader Services for the Kansas City Public Library. Welcome to tonight's event for CJ Janovy's No Place Like Home. I am so privileged to introduce tonight's speaker, CJ Janovy, particularly on this day, the day after an election, for it was another political activity, a Supreme Court ruling that inspired this quiet, powerful book about the unlikeliest of heroes and heroines in the unlikeliest of places. On June 26, 2013, the Supreme Court overturned the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8. CJ recognized the significance of this decision and wondered where Kansas fit in this historic moment. So tonight, we will hear a history of LGBT activism in Kansas that is anything but predictable. It is surprising, moving, frustrating, and inspiring. It is a richer history than we could possibly anticipate, according to a recent reader. The people whose stories you will hear are like anyone in this room. In fact, two of them are in this room, Michael Popa and Sid Slayton. CJ will invite them to speak to us a little later. If you ask any of the activists in No Place Like Home, they never considered how inspiring and courageous their actions were and are. They were behaving the way Kansans have always behaved, taking a stand, doing what's right, getting things done. Sometimes the doors didn't open, no matter how loud and hard these folks pounded, but that's okay. As one young reader mused to me and CJ recently, this book opened up a door for me, and now I know we have to open all of them. I know my own community now through their past. These people are my teachers in activism. CJ knows a lot about the Kansas City community. She's lived here since 1990, and her work at the Alternative Weekly, The Pitch, and KCUR have informed her ability to find the stories we need to read and hear. As much as this book is about history, activism, and Kansas, it is also a book about love. But we'll let CJ tell us that story. Please welcome CJ Janovy.
Wow, there's a lot of you out there. Thank you, Katie, for that those beautiful words. Thank all of you for being here. I don't want to break this. Before I actually start talking about this, I want to do something that I saw Angus Finnan, who's the executive director of Folk Alliance International, do back in February when the Folk Alliance opened their annual conference here. And I would like to acknowledge that we're on the traditional land of the Kaw, the Osage, Missouri, Oto, and Kansa people. I would also just like to thank the Kansas City Public Library for having all of us here tonight, and for all the work that they did, Katie and Steve Weberg in particular, in getting two stories about this book in the Kansas City Star. Thank you to the Kansas City Star for publishing those stories, and for the Kansas City Center for Inclusion for hosting a book conversation last weekend. I'd also just like to acknowledge librarians in general. Can all the librarians in the room stand up, please, and look around? Besides being here in this sacred place, the libraries show up a lot in the book. I spent a lot of time looking at microfilm and newspaper archives, and also many of the people in the book spent a lot of time meeting and having, you know, important discussions and community building conversations in libraries in their towns. So support your local libraries, everyone. I know you do because you're here. I've spent so many nights sitting out there. I keep wanting to go back and sit out there, but I'm going to stay up here for a little while and talk about all of this. One of the most important things for any writer is to know their audience. So I have some questions for or a request from you guys in the audience. Can everyone who identifies as LGBTQ, etc., stand up and look around and look at each other, see each other. Thank you very much. What about parents or family members, LGBTQ, et cetera, folks? Great, thank you. What about elected officials? We have elected officials in the room? I know we have one, Michael. You'll hear from Michael Popa later, and the rest of you, if there's an elected official in the room who does not feel like standing, you could learn about courage from the folks in this book, I guess. Katie talked a little bit about how this whole thing got started, and so I'm just going to show some pictures that are from the book and sort of kind of how this book got written. I'm not going to go sort of chronologically through the book, but I'll sort of give some overviews. I'll read a little bit. I don't know, many of you probably remember this photograph of the White House on June 26th, 2015, when the United States Supreme Court issued its ruling in the Obergefell case that legalized marriage equality across the country. And at the time of that ruling, polls showed that about 63% of Americans were totally in favor of same-sex marriage. Totally cool with same-sex marriage, 63%. Exactly 10 years before that, what happened in Kansas? 70% of the voters in Kansas passed a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. So we went from 70% of Kansans in 2005 banning same-sex marriage to 10 years later, this huge, huge change in public opinion, huge change in the cultural, legal landscape of our country. Kansas did that in 2005. Missouri did it a year earlier in 2004. If you can sort of remember those days, I was working at the Pitch. We covered a lot of the politics of the marriage amendment in both states. And one of the most frustrating things at that time for me and for a lot of us in the community was how much just that whole issue was just a political wedge issue. This was, at the time, nothing really that gay people had, you know, made a priority. It had been sort of working its way up through the courts, and in 2000, and I can't remember what year it was, Massachusetts legalized same-sex marriage, and it freaked out the rest of the country, but also this was very convenient for George W. Bush running for re-election, and Democratic politicians at the time would say, you know, very strong statements like, well, I personally believe that marriage ought to be between a man and a woman, but, you know, whatever. And Jay Nixon, who was Attorney General of Missouri at the time, worked very hard to get the ballot, the issue on the ballot in the August primary of 2004 so that it wouldn't be on the November presidential election and maybe wouldn't hurt John Kerry's chances, and we kind of know how all that went. So this was a difficult political situation. I wrote a couple columns for The Pitch complaining about the politics of this, and I remember how it felt on the days of both of those elections, and particularly in Kansas. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. My grandparents live in Oklahoma City. And a couple times a year as I was a kid growing up, my family made a long drive in the car straight south from Lincoln to Oklahoma City all the way through Kansas. And so my whole life I had this relationship with the landscape and the state. It was, you know, a boring drive most of that time, but it was very much a part of my process growing up. And then when I moved to Kansas City, and I would go to Oklahoma City to see my relatives. It was a different drive, more diagonal, Kansas City to Oklahoma City, but straight through the Flint Hills. And you know, I grew up on the prairie. It's sacred to me, this landscape. And I remember that the right after that election, when Kansans passed that amendment, 70% of them, It just felt like I was in hostile territory, and it felt that way for a long time. But things started changing, and public opinion started changing, and some of these marriage cases began to make their way up through the legal system until we got to this. I'm going to show you a news report here. This is the 2013 Supreme Court ruling that that Katie mentioned. So this is June 26, 2013, and I'm actually in the crowd that you'll see here, and we'll listen to this news report.
Landmark rulings today from the Supreme Court delivered major victories to proponents of same-sex marriage.
We won everything we asked and hoped for.
That's Edith Windsor, the woman who filed a lawsuit challenging the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. In a 5-4 vote today, the High Court struck down parts of that law, allowing same-sex spouses to receive certain federal benefits in states where their marriage is legal. Not everyone is happy with the ruling.
The Supreme Court has no authority when it comes to the nature of marriage.
The court did not make a sweeping statement either in favor of or against same-sex marriage, and it didn't say anything about the validity of gay marriage bans, like the ones in place in Kansas and Missouri. Right now, gay rights advocates are rallying at the federal courthouse in downtown Kansas City. KNBC9's Cliff Judy is there live. Cliff?
Larry, you'd be hard-pressed to find a group more excited here in the Kansas City Metro. I actually just heard a speaker up there break down in tears, so obviously a very emotional crowd here, too. Now, local equality commissions and the Human Rights Campaign organized this rally. The people here say this morning's ruling, some of the few moments in your life when you're going to remember exactly where you were, exactly what you were doing when it came down. Some told me they jumped around their homes, fist-pumping the air. Some told me they stopped business meetings and made everyone listen into the news coverage. Now, while this doesn't equal sweeping change for nationwide same-sex marriage laws, many here believe that's now just a matter of time.
This sets a precedent, you know, with DOMA that will be used again and again in the upcoming years that it takes before we have marriage equality in all 50 states.
Now, as far as a tangible effect here in Kansas and Missouri, a local attorney that I talked to this afternoon says actually there are none. She said she had clients who were calling her all day long saying, can I drive up I-29? Can I drive up I-35? Get married in Iowa, come back here to Kansas City and still get federal benefits. She said, no, today's rulings are still based on domicile. They're based on where you live, basically. Larry?
And Cliff, a second big ruling from the Supreme Court today struck down California's statewide ban on same-sex marriage. A federal appeals court says it will wait at least 25 days before allowing gay marriages to resume.
So that day was super hot. And the whole time, and the rally was sort of lackluster, partly because it was super hot, but partly because I think we were celebrating something that did not apply to us. A person could have driven to Iowa, gotten married, come back, and as soon as they crossed the state line, their marriage would not be legal anymore. And I thought, this is so weird. This is so weird. And whenever I feel something that is that weird, I think I need to investigate. And there's the perfect place to investigate is Kansas, because it's right in the middle of the country between the two coasts where these decisions get made. It's the home of the Westboro Baptist Church, and it's Kansas. And so I started sort of talking to people, calling people. I knew that some stuff had happened over the years and in Kansas that was that might be a little bit surprising if I started to really start reporting on it. So This is the Kansas that's in this book, there's lots of other cities in Kansas, but these were the ones that I visited, and I love that this is a map that's in the book, and it's sort of it was made by a friend of mine, and I like it because it's quiet, stark, simple, and beautiful, much like the Kansas that I discovered. So we have chapters that take place the book's like four parts. So the first quarter is the defeat, and it's really gloomy and depressing. the second part is sort of, and that first part is the story of the marriage amendment and how it passed and how people tried to fight to keep it from passing and everybody lost. And then the second part is sort of really how activists picked themselves up, dusted themselves off, and got organized and decided, you know, we're not going to let anything like this happen to us again without at least, you know, fighting back in an organized kind of way. The third part of the book is, so those first parts take place kind of, I have chapters set in all these different cities. So the chapter one is Topeka, chapter two is way out west, chapter three is Lawrence, and then, you know, the middle part of the book is Salina, Hutchinson, Manhattan, and then toward the end we kind of go all over the place. And by the end of it, I think we're seeing some really surprising people doing amazing things that no one would ever really, you know, associate with the state of Kansas. So that's kind of, those were my travels over the 4 years from 2013 to when I finally sent this to the University Press of Kansas in the fall of recently, last fall, almost a year ago. So like way out in Trigo County, I found the person who identified herself as really probably the only out lesbian in all of Western Kansas. And who knows where Trigo County is? 5 hours straight west on I-70. The nearest town is Waukini. And Sandra Stenzel is smiling here, but she had a really rough time of it. She was head of economic development in for Trigo County, and she went to Topeka to testify against the marriage amendment. And she said, you know, this is it will be bad for economic development in Kansas if you do something discriminatory like this. And she ended up losing her job in a very dramatic way. Not just you're fired, but it involved town hall meetings and really sort of public humiliation. And she really, this kind of ruined her life for a long time. So that's one of the more heartbreaking stories in the book. But she's a very strong, powerful voice. And I went to a lot of rallies at the Kansas Capitol. This one was February of 2015, shortly after Sam Brown got elected, but shortly after a first round of these marriage decisions at the Supreme Court, and Brownback saw that marriage equality was gonna come to Kansas. It was only a matter of time, but he was gonna fight it, and one of the first things that he did to fight it was to rescind an executive order that Kathleen Sebelius had signed protecting state employees, LGBT employees, from discrimination. So Brownback rescinded that early 2015, and we went to the Capitol on Valentine's Day, and that was my favorite sign of that day. Went to the Capitol a lot. This is just a random shot from a two-lane highway in Montezuma, which is southwest Kansas between Meade and Cimarron. And this is that's just kind of what it looks like out there. I'm going to take this opportunity to read a passage about one of the people in the book, a woman named Tanya Jantz, who lives out there. What I found in going to all these towns and talking to people, everybody was so generous with their life story, and that's what you get in the book, is you just get people telling about their lives in Kansas. And here's just one example. So Tanya Jantz had known she was different from age 7 or 8. But in the 70s, in western Kansas, there were no words to describe it. Jantz dated men after heading to Southwestern College, a tiny Methodist school in Winfield, south of Wichita, on a tennis scholarship. She kept discovering that more of the girls on her teams were lesbians. Her dorm was filled with them. They invited her to their parties, which made her uncomfortable until she finally came out herself, fake IDing her way into fantasy in Wichita in the mid-80s. "It was awesome," she said at the bar. "You had the country music side and the rock side and the outside part with the volleyball nets. And it was just 200 gay people every Friday and Saturday night. All the basketball players from Bethany and Bethel and Southwestern." These are the evangelical, Lutheran, Mennonite, and Methodist-affiliated colleges in Lindsborg, Newton, and Winfield that competed against each other on Saturday nights. But on Friday nights, we'd be out there and hook up and talk and communicate in our little secret language, secret world. Jance moved to Kansas City for chiropractic school, and as her graduation drew near in the early 90s, she planned on establishing a practice in Denver. I thought, I need to go someplace and be gay, really, and not have to hide myself. But the chiropractor in Cimarron, Dr. Ellis, was ill with emphysema and cancer. Jance had to do an internship anyway, so she figured she would spend a few weeks studying with him and visiting her family. People begged her to stay. "This is not someplace I want to live at all," Jance thought. Unlike Denver, Cimarron was home to only about 2,000 people. She liked mountains, but Cimarron was high plains flat. She liked to ride jet skis, but Cimarron was an hour and a half from the nearest decent lake. She didn't like the heat, didn't like the constant wind, or the omnipresent stench of feed yards. People would say, "That's the smell of money, Tanya." Well, it's not my money. It's like, geez, it stinks out here. Well, the people were irresistible. People in Southwest Kansas, they're just very endearing, very loving, very giving. Sometimes for Jance, the smell of money was fresh bread or a casserole. A Mennonite lady might come in with six kids and say, "I need them worked on and I can't afford it." "Okay, sure, I'll take cookies and whatever you got." So I did a lot of free care. I still do a lot of free care. When Jance says still, she's talking about more than 20 years. Jance buckled down, healing the aches and pains of Cimarron and spending time with her grandparents. Fearing she would lose her family if they found out she was gay, she hid that part of herself, or thought she did. One day, she went to pick up her 76-year-old grandfather, who was being released from the hospital in Dodge. Listening to music on the drive home, he asked if she had any Melissa Etheridge. I was like, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, your Aunt Linda listens to that Come to My Window song all the time. Do you have that?" Of course, Jance did. So I popped it in the CD, and we're listening to it, and he goes, "You know she's from Leavenworth, right? She's from Kansas." I said, "Well, yes, Grandpa, I do." He says, "Do you know she's a lesbian?" I about choked and wrecked the truck. I said, "Yes, I do." And he goes, "Well, you know, that's just all right." And that was all that was said. It was all that needed to be said. Jance stayed with him every night for the next month, helping her grandmother take care of him until he died at home. So, Cimarron. What do we have now? Manhattan. So this is Adam O'Brien. This is a billboard that was up in Manhattan, Kansas in 2010, 2011 maybe. Why do we have a billboard of a transgender man up in Manhattan, Kansas, 7 or 8 years ago? If you've been paying attention to arts and culture in Kansas City this summer, you know that there was a documentary that screened earlier this summer called The Ordnance Project. Who saw it? Fair number of you. Okay, so it was about Kansas City's effort to pass a non-discrimination ordinance in the early 90s. And so the idea of non-discrimination ordinance is a tactic that's been used in the LGBT rights movement for decades now. And so basically the way it works is every city hall, every county commission has a list of categories of people who cannot be discriminated against. So you can't be discriminated against based on race, religion, marital status. There's several of them. I can't list them all off the top of my head right now, but the way this works is you go to city hall and you say, "Hey, city council, city commission, will you please add gender identity and sexual orientation to your list?" And usually what happens is they say, "Oh, we got to think about this." And they send it to a committee and there's public hearings, there's testimony, and it usually gets pretty ugly. and controversial. And so Manhattan did this, Salina did this, and Hutchinson did this. And in all of those cities, it got ugly, and it for various reasons, and you can read about them in the book. But what happens is these public hearings, these debates at City Hall, these newspaper articles, editorials, letters to the editor, they go on for months in these towns. And also in these towns, sometimes there's a citywide referendum. You know, let's take it to vote of the people. Are we going to let, you know, gay people have their rights? And in all three of those cities in Kansas, ultimately, in the end, the sexual orientation and gender identity did not get added to the city ordinances. What happened, though, is because there's this months-long campaign, the whole city gets educated. You have people talking to each other who never would have had a chance to talk to each other. You have people writing letters, coming out, listening to people's stories that they never would have heard before. And so in a place like Manhattan, you end up with, this doesn't happen, this Adam O'Brien turns up on a billboard later after this fails in Manhattan, but it builds the kind of support network that can allow this kind of, you know, statement to be made. Here is the website for the sort of what I'll call the antagonist through the middle section of the book, which is an organization called Awaken Kansas, and they had chapters. They got chapters up in these towns to fight. To fight. This is me on a reporting trip. To fight what they branded as the bathroom bills. If you give LGBT people equal rights, you know, your children are going to be endangered in the bathrooms by these folks. And the rhetoric is ugly. The rhetoric is the same that you're seeing against trans folks today. But as a result, you have, for example, the first gay pride celebration ever in Salina. And this is one of the organizers, Scott Grabiel, at the second pride where I went on a reporting trip. And what happens when you do this, they force you to put on a funny hat and pose for the camera. But you can see I'm working. Scott Grabiel tells me in the book, you know, there's this painful process in Salina where they lose on this ordinance effort, but he says it built this community that never would have existed, and he says it's the best time to be gay in Salina. We don't have our ordinance on the books, but we have our pride celebrations. That's Scott in Salina. These are two, at the time, high school kids in Hutchinson that I met in the course of reporting for the book. This is Kara Vaughn and her wingman, Eddie Ibarra. They started the first gay-straight alliance at Hutchinson High School in 2014. This is at the spring dance that they had. Hutchinson is home of the now-departed Kansas Representative Jan Pauls, who was a Democrat, who was sponsor of all of the most anti-gay legislation in the Kansas State House for a couple decades. So this is the future of Hutchinson here. So I'm going to show you another news clip, and this gets into the sort of the last part of the book, where I profile a couple of transgender activists. One of them, Sandra Mead, who lived here in Kansas City, is now in California, and the other one is named Stephanie Mott, who some of you might know. She's based in Topeka, and one of the things that became very important for activists in Kansas was to put transgender people in leadership roles. And so you had folks, you know, trans folks at the head of statewide organizations in you know, 2010, 2011. Stephanie Mott, I'm gonna show you a news clip, and I need to explain what's going on because it's kind of hard to hear. Over the 4th of July weekend of 2011, Stephanie Mott is tired of the rhetoric that she's hearing from politicians in Topeka, and she decides she's gonna drive 1,000 or 1,500 miles in a circle around the state of Kansas and stop strangers in random places in public and ask them what they know about transgender. So she does this. She spends the whole long 4th of July weekend walking up to strangers and starting these conversations. And she ends up, you can read how that turns out. She finds that most Kansans do not have the same attitudes as the people that allegedly represent them in the state house. One of the reasons she did this, besides just, for her own effort and to write about it and start these conversations, she did it to get media coverage. And so you have like the town of Colby, Kansas, with a front page story about a transgender tour coming to Colby. And this is a clip that used to be on the internet and is no longer on the internet. The audio quality and the visual quality is really crappy here, but I knew that this clip that I found might not be on the internet forever, so I made a video of it with my camera for my own research and archival purposes. And so what you'll hear is, local TV in Manhattan talking about this transgender woman who's coming to Topeka to have this tour. So maybe we can sort of hear how it goes.
In an effort to raise awareness about transgender issues, a kickoff rally was held in Manhattan this morning. The Kansas Transgender Education Project Executive Director Stephanie Mott will be traveling throughout Kansas to spread the word about transgender and sexual orientation issues. Mott will address some misunderstandings people have about lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender.
This is wrong. It's wrong to terminate somebody's employment because they happen to be LGBT. It's wrong to deny somebody housing because they're LGBT. It's wrong to say somebody can't come in this place just because they're LGBT. There's nothing about who I am that has anything to do with whether or not that I can do a good job, whether or not I'll be a good tenant, or whether or not that I'll come into a place and be an appropriate customer.
Mott's statewide tour will last throughout the 4th of July.
So whoever's watching TV that night in Manhattan sees a transgender person saying, there's nothing about who I am that has anything to do with whether I'll be a good employee, a good tenant, or a good customer. And so Stephanie learns on this tour that trans folks way out in Kansas suddenly had a lifeline, suddenly knew there were other folks. They weren't alone, and this is, just a super courageous, brave thing that she does. So you can read more about her in the book. You can read more about these two folks. This is Darcy Potroff and Jolene Spain of Manhattan. I'm going to read one more little short passage just to give a sense of their story. This is, after that first round of Supreme Court decisions in 2013, there's a few more, and as I said earlier, Brownback realizes that at some point he's going to have to let marriage equality happen in his state, but he fights it county by county, and it gets legal really fast. And some people in some counties get married, and then it has to stop while the legal process continues. So that's where we pick up. Far away from Brownback's cold-hearted office, the people of Kansas were starting to show that he didn't represent all of them. In Manhattan, something unusual began happening after Darcy Potroff and Jolene Spain's ceremony on the sidewalk outside of the Riley County Courthouse the previous November had put them at the center of a small market media frenzy involving the Manhattan Mercury, the KSNT-TV broadcast from Topeka, and some AM radio news stations. The two women hadn't been particularly aggressive activists. "We don't have rainbow flags hanging all over everything. I'm not out there going gay rights for everybody," Potroff said. "The biggest thing we do, most importantly, we're at home. We do some really strange things like have picnics in the backyard. We mow our lawn, we keep a nice house, trim the shrubbery out front, maintain our vehicles, maintain our home. We have kids, now 5 grandsons. We make a statement by being normal. Getting married in front of the media was the most newsworthy thing either one of them had ever done, although Potroff had managed to get appointed to a seat on the city council of Riley, population just under 1,000. One day in the grocery store, a woman approached them. "I do not know this lady," Spain remembered. "She saw us, she looked, she went back. She went a little bit away, looked again, turned around, and came back. She put her hand on my arm and said, 'Are you the couple that got married?' I said, 'Yeah, we are.' She said, 'Can I give you a hug?' She started bawling, just sobbing on Darcy's shoulder. She was like, I'm so happy for you. Wedding cards and presents came pouring in, which wasn't surprising because the couple had a wide circle of friends. But then envelopes started arriving in their mailbox with no return address. Wedding cards signed simply Dave and Martha or other names they didn't know. No last names. Quiet but solid, classically Kansan gestures of support. So that's sort of how things start to feel toward the end of the book. I'm now going to ask one of the folks in the book, Sid Slayton, to come talk about whatever Sid wants to talk about, and I'm not going to give too much bio because she can identify herself however she wants, but this is the night that the results came in, April 5th, 2005. We all remember how that felt, and so this is Sid right here. All of the folks in this picture are all but two, this guy and this person. Everyone else is in that picture is in the book. And so let's welcome Sid Slayton.
Good evening. I see some familiar faces. So I guess I'm to deal with part one, which is the gloomy and depressing part, I think, as you described it. That seems so long ago. It's been a while since I've talked to a group about this issue, so I'm a bit rusty, but the memories did flood back in the last 24 hours, and I had some emotional moments talking about how that came together. Thank you for weaving these stories, these touching stories of people who we saw again and again in this short period of 7 weeks, who were taking their first steps out. It was an amazing thing to see. I felt so privileged. They were working not only for their dignity, but for obviously the dignity of others. So there are four people in this photo that I want to honor for having taken those steps, and they were great role models for me. But first, let me just make a few introductory remarks. I was not a gay activist. I was 52, and my life was really not about taking the chances of stepping into the parades and trying to do those things which would raise awareness about gay issues. And I reminded myself in the last 24 hours that I think what I did was partly for my redemption as well as trying to help others. My first step was actually a response to a request from the Kansas City Human Rights Campaign. Two men had started the Human Rights Campaign in just prior to the marriage amendment election, and they wanted a woman to join them, as HRC requires in every city. They want parity. So I remember being very reluctant. I think I said something like, I'll do something behind the scenes, but don't ask me to go up front. Within 3 weeks, I was asked to be the press secretary for Kansans for Fairness. So I was on an accelerated track. And in retrospect, after therapy and introspection, I have to say, I think I did it to myself. I think I was wanting to join those people that had the courage to come out. So it was my karma to be part of this process. The person that was assigned to me in this role with HRC was a 22-year-old gay man. Again, I was 52. We had many discussions in his, we called it his Mercedes, but it was his jalopy. I could always tell when he was coming up to the house because I could hear the car before I heard him. It was a tender relationship. Kevin is looking at the computer with me, and to this day, we talk every month or so. We email each other and see how we're doing. And I should add, the four people that I'm going to talk about have all left Kansas, with the exception of Diane, who's on the far right. I studied what happened 30 years earlier when Kansas tried to do this, when Wichita in particular tried to have an LGBT ordinance. Those people also left after the election, but here's a real critical difference. Some of them committed suicide. And I can tell you these people are vibrant, and they're out there in their communities doing great things. So it's a wonderful testament to the power of civic engagement and standing up for yourself and for others. Just a humorous moment, when Kevin and I first met in Latte Land, the group seemed to always meet at Latte Land on the plaza. Kevin was talking out loud, what seemed to me to be very out loud, about our LGBT strategy and not being quite out. I was like, oh God, please. The room was crowded. I just knew that my boss or somebody was sitting around me. I said, Kevin, could you talk a little slower? And could you talk a little softer? And Kevin said, what? What are you talking about? I said, could you just speak a little lower? And finally, he said, we got to talk. So we got in the car, and he said, are you going to be okay with this? And I didn't know if I was going to be okay with it, but I said, sure, I'll work through this. But I went through that many times during that first month. And Kevin, my 22-year-old gay man friend, was my mentor. I had the opportunity several months ago to be at his wedding, and I had the chance to publicly thank him for being my dear, dear friend. He was a great guy. So as I was leaving the first meeting in Topeka, where I had reluctantly, I was always reluctant, took the job of being press secretary, after I said yes, Madeline, my spouse, Madeline McDonough, we were married in 2015 after the Supreme Court ruling, Madeline and I had a discussion about whether I'd done the right thing. She was fine with it, but I just, every 10 minutes, I went over, okay, oh God, what have I done? What have I done? I'll never be able to work in this area again. I'll never, life's going to change too much. So I came up with a strategy, and the strategy was act like you are a corporate communications director, and you're never going to have to come out yourself. You're going to defend these people. People might even think I'm a mom to Kevin, a straight mom, and they're going to be fine with it. So that's how I handled this situation for a while, until reporters would call up and I would occasionally slip up. For example, a reporter called from the Wichita Eagle, and she kept asking me to be more personal about the story, and I would go where I always felt more comfortable, which was political and the 1,132 rights and responsibilities that the gay couples do not have, which is true, by the way. She said, no, listen, before you get off the phone, you got to tell me something about yourself. I've got to humanize you. And I said, okay, my partner and I are worried about our health care benefits. She said, thank you, that's what I needed. I put down the phone, I thought, oh my God, I have cousins I haven't told in Wichita. So this is how I came out, and I did it to myself, obviously. The headquarters that we set up, we had no money. The headquarters that we set up, at least for myself as press secretary, was in a corner of a bedroom on the second floor of our house. I had an old computer that was always going down. I had a printer that was constantly, the paper was crinkling up and all that business, and yet we were trying to crank out press releases and keep the network together throughout the state. You can imagine how difficult it was to do this, but I'm here to say something, and I think you were working on underscoring, CJ, and that was, this election was a gift. It was a gift in so many ways. I think my relationship with Madeline improved because, and we had a wonderful relationship, but I had no idea what was missing in terms of really being as open as you can be and not being uptight all the time about somebody finding out about something. It was also a gift because I met these dear, dear people. So let me just quickly tell you a few stories, okay? On the left is Bruce Nye. Bruce was the leader of Kansans for Fairness. I saw Bruce do things that would make many people cringe, but he had great courage. And the one thing that comes to mind is I was to pull together a debate on KCPT, bring people in who would spar with Bruce. And the one person who would do it for sure was Reverend Jerry Johnston, which perhaps some of you know for sundry reasons. And Reverend Johnston went after Bruce. I was 10 feet from him, and I was so sad. I was so sad. Bruce is an upstanding guy. He's a corporate attorney. He was trying to put the best face on this and allow us to go into places and communities we would not be able to go. He was a very well-coiffed man, and he was really being ripped into in a degrading sort of way. And I was able to see Bruce steel himself, answer without taking things personally in a way I don't think I've ever seen anyone do, ever. So Bruce was a gift to me and to all of us. Tiffany Mueller, in the center there, who was the city councilwoman in Topeka, she was fighting for her race in the hometown of the Westboro Church. She was also leading the fight against the marriage amendment. And here's the one thing I remember about Tiffany that just stays with me today. So it's the night that we've lost. It was perhaps the worst loss, or about the worst loss in the country. I know it was relatively similar, but it was really bad. People filed out immediately. We were in the basement of the Ramada Inn in Topeka. They came in, they got their sandwiches, they mulled around, they saw wasn't going well, and they filed out. So by about 9 o'clock, there were only, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 of us, and news crews. Tiffany and Bruce had speeches they were to give. By then, I'm guessing there were maybe 5 or 6 of us left. Both Bruce and Tiffany stood as though there was an audience in front of them and gave their touching speeches. I don't know how they did it. But Tiffany has gone on to continue her work in the LGBT community in Washington, D.C. She's doing many things as well. And, of course, Bruce continues as a corporate attorney. He's now working, I think, in Texas, Austin, Texas. Diane, on the far right, was head of communications. I, in essence, reported to her. Diane Silver's from Lawrence, and she... One of the things I remember about Diane is she stayed on conference calls for hours and hours on end while she tried to get these various gay groups around the state, LGBT groups around the state, to talk with each other. We were all, many of us were also different coming from our various regions. But she stayed on that phone past midnight, and I tried to stay up with her, but she really is to be commended for that really important work. Then Kevin, as I say, we from Latte Land, things got better, but it really took every bit of 7 weeks. And I'll just tell you one story related to Kevin and also related to Chris Hernandez, you might remember from KSHB-TV. You know, we didn't get the big publicity, if you will, until the very end of the campaign. People didn't really, the media, the pitch was, I believe, an exception, but generally people were not willing to talk about it. So here, within 7 weeks of the time the legislature called for this campaign, we had to try to get the word out that, okay, there were gay people in Kansas. We wanted to stay in Kansas. We wanted to be considered equal citizens in Kansas. Chris Hernandez called up and he said, can I come over to your living room and can I interview you? And I said, first reluctantly, because that was how I was. Well, and then I tried to sound very assured. Yes, yes, please do come over. And I hung up the phone. I thought, what have I done? My family's here. My friends are here. My boy, you know, people I've worked with. But that was just something that I worked through, and I was getting much better at it. I got a call from Kevin, and Kevin said, look, I'll take this. You've been working a lot. Everybody was working many hours. And I said, no, I think I'll take it. Well, to make a long story short, Chris interviewed me. I was nervous as could be in my hometown. And I was so staccato in speaking, I don't even know how he edited this thing together. as he was leaving, he let me know he thought, wow, that was a little awkward. And he didn't say it quite that way. We are friends, by the way, now. But I shut the door. I think I had an anxiety attack. I went into my family room, and it was dark, and I sat in a corner, and I thought, oh, my God. I can't even believe. I keep pushing the envelope. Wider and wider circles, I want to be open. I've done it this time. I called Kevin's mother. I said, oh, dear God, what have I done? She was so sweet to me. Kevin was so sweet to me. And in the darkness, I turned on the TV, and I thought, okay, it's going to be over, and then I'm going to have to move. It was over, and I just kind of like, well, God, I did it. And he did a great job editing it, and I survived it. And there were many, many things that happened during and after the campaign, but I would say that was kind of the defining moment for me to say, okay, you will survive this. You will thrive, not survive, if you keep doing this. And I did keep doing it in bigger ways, ultimately, the New York Times, which now that's coming out. A reporter came to Kansas. So I want to thank these people, and I want to thank you, CJ, for everything you've done.
Thank you, Sid. We're just going to hear from one more person who is in the book, Michael Popa, who some of you might know is now a city councilman in Roland Park. And Roland Park was one of those cities that had the non-discrimination ordinance effort. And let's hear what Michael Popa has to say about it.
There are a lot of people here, huh? Thank you all for being here tonight. CJ, thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be here with you and Sid. Sid, you blazed the trail for us. Thank you very much. And please. And CJ, you chronicled it. Thank you. As Sid said, a lot of memories and emotions have flooded up in the last couple of days thinking about this. I was telling CJ earlier that I hadn't thought about this for about 4 years. It's been 4 years since the non-discrimination ordinance passed in Roland Park. 4 years, 4 days ago, actually, August 4th. So I may tear up a little bit here pretty soon. I guess it all started for me the same way as Sid mentioned. I was an accidental activist. I lived in LA in 2008, and that was the same year that Barack Obama was elected President of the United States. And I wish he was still with us. That same night, Prop 8 passed that CJ was talking about earlier. And I woke up that next morning so conflicted because we had just elected Barack Obama and there was hope and yes, we can. And then I was on an island. You know, people in the state that I lived in didn't respect me enough, didn't think I was as good as them. And I was in a really deep dark place then. I was in a kind of a deep hole. And then my roommate got me out and took me to some rallies, and it opened my eyes. And it was the first time that I'd ever seen or been a part of a group of people that were united for one cause and so passionate and fighting and screaming and yelling and raising the flag that it was just an amazing sight. And here's this kid from Kansas and in the middle of all of it. Well, I finally moved home, and that passion, it became kind of a slow burn. It was there, but it wasn't prevalent, or as prevalent. 2013, DOMA was struck down, the Windsor case. I remember where I was. My partner, then now husband, Tom, right here. We were on vacation. We were at Beaver Lake. It was 2 days before my birthday, so I thought, hey, this is an amazing birthday present. Got home, and a friend of mine who was on council in Roland Park at the time said, hey, have you heard of this group called Equality Kansas? No, I haven't. She goes, I really think you need to get involved with it. So I was like, okay, I might. We'll see. The next meeting was, in a few weeks, and we were planning on going, and I think I told my husband, we don't need to go. It's maybe next month. And he goes, no, let's go. He dragged me there. I was elected as a secretary that night of the local chapter. And then within 2 months, I was chair of the local chapter. It was a wild ride. The chair at the time was Sandra Mead, who CJ mentioned earlier, and she had gone on to become chair of the statewide organization. Beginning of 2014, we were approached by two council members that wanted to bring a non-discrimination ordinance in front of the council. And so in February, which was supposed, it was supposed to be a slam dunk, they had the votes, it was going to happen, this was just a formality. Sandra and I went to the council meeting. I was there as not only the chapter chair of Equality Kansas, but a Roland Park resident. And we're talking, and we think, okay, this is going well, people seem receptive. And this one guy, this one council member that was never on board, looks at Sandra, who's transgender, and says, "Miss Mead, if you walked into the men's restroom, I would have a heart attack." She said, "Yeah, that's my point. That's my point." They didn't get it. And it was evident that they didn't get it. And it was evident they were going to make the entire battle about the bathroom, as they'd done in other cities, in other states. And a slam dunk ordinance became a 5-month-long battle. And it was pretty arduous. And we got some national coverage. We got a lot of local coverage, Shawnee Mission Post, The Pitch, Kansas City Star. We were on every television station. They did a lot of editing to make me even sound halfway coherent, so I understand, Sid. We had a town hall, a city-sanctioned town hall at one point, where Robert Nolan from the Kansas Family Policy Council, defined as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, affiliated with Focus on the Family, was allowed to come in to our city and have a debate on human rights with Sandra Mead. She kicked ass that night. She did. They bussed people in from Topeka, from Wichita. There were hundreds of people at this community forum. It was the largest community forum that Roland Park ever had. And for all the love and support that we heard, there was so much vitriol and so much hate and just so much ignorance, really. Up until that time, I'd been kind of walking a line between council member and, or I'm not sorry, not council member, but a Equality Kansas volunteer and resident of Roland Park. And I was out, you know, I was an out gay man. My husband and I were living together. Didn't make any bones about it, but I wasn't walking down the street, you know, waving the flag and wearing the shirts every day. You know, I didn't show everyone my card, if you will. And so I didn't do a lot of speaking, public speaking at that point, at council meetings. But I was really shaken by that town hall and what I heard. So I thought it was my duty to get up at the next council meeting and speak and testify, just as so many other brave people in that city had done. And I have what I said that night, and I'll just read through it quickly. But it kind of gives you an idea of what was going on at the time. "Others have been brave enough to share their stories and explain to you why this ordinance is so important. Though I've been cautiously walking the line between Roland Park resident and Equality Kansas volunteer, first and foremost, I'm a member of this community, and now I need to be brave enough to share my own story. I'll never forget my formative years spent in battle at what some remember as elementary school. I was very insecure as a boy, a glaring fact of which I was reminded 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, and 9 months of every year for almost a decade. I didn't have many friends. During my time in the ranks at our parish school, I experienced verbal, physical, and emotional bullying based on others' perceptions of my sexual orientation. The first time I heard the word homosexual, or faggot, was in the first grade during lunch. Kyle, one of my more infamous detractors, approached me as his friends looked on with anticipation. When he reached my table, he began punching me in the arm and twisting my arm, and he wouldn't let go until I said, yes, I'm a homosexual. So that night, or that afternoon, I got home and I went and asked my mom what that word meant and why Kyle called me that. Sarah was a girl in my class who lived in my neighborhood. Our parents were friends, so she and I spent a lot of time together riding bikes and memorizing vocab words. We were good friends at home, but at school, it was a completely different story. She would see me in the hall, I'd come up to her and say hi, and she'd be like, go play with the girl, stupid homo. And then when I saw her after school and we played again, she'd say, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to say that stuff, but I have to, you know? I was like, I do. I understand. And the sad thing was I did. Throughout the years, I've purposely placed many miles between the memory of that little boy and the man that I am today. That vast distance proved to be in vain that Monday night at the forum as a group of Roland Park residents stood before the city council spouting misinformation while unabashedly opposing protections for those they call neighbors and friends. As I sat there, a paralyzed little boy once again, I could not comprehend that these voices belonged to people in my community, my neighbors, I heard Sarah's voice at the microphone explaining, of course we're friends, but only if you play by my rules. I felt Kyle's fist crashing into my right shoulder. The bullies were back. And they were. They were for 5 months. And there were a lot of amazing people that I worked side by side with to get this ordinance passed. And on the first vote in July, it failed. And we were devastated. And we held it together. And I remember getting home that night, walking in the door, and the first thing I did was turn and hug my husband, and I lost it. But 2 weeks later, we had a resident reintroduce it, and it passed with the mayor breaking the tie. That's the picture. That's the picture right after, outside, me and Tom. I went on, I'm not gonna bore you anymore, it's in the book. I went on, ran for city council, beat my opponent, who was a huge opponent of the ordinance by 4 votes. Heard a lot at the doors, you could read it in the book. Again, thank you for letting me be here tonight with you. And you hear a lot about Kansas values now, especially during campaign season, but this book, that's Kansas values. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael and Sid. In summary, there's lots of lessons. The subtitle of this book is Lessons in Activism from LGBT Kansas. There's lots of different lessons in all the individual stories that people will recognize, but these were the three themes that sort of emerged for me. And especially are relevant in any cause. And I know that a lot of people are thinking about how to be activists right now and what to do. And my first piece of advice to you is prepare to lose. As you'll see, as we heard, we lost and lost and lost and lost, but we gained so many other things. Be gentle with your allies. You'll see a lot of infighting in this book. There's people with big egos in the world of activism, and there's people who want to help but may not know the right language or might not be entirely educated, and so be gentle with those folks. And finally, just do something. This book, you have those big people with those big egos who are leading the rallies at the Capitol, and you have people who are baking lemon bars and everything in between, and all of it matters. So I want to thank you guys so much for your attention and for being here and for whatever you're doing out there in the world. And just keep doing it. Thanks.